everyone. Welcome to this episode of Liberty Lens right here on Grumblings Media. Check us out on all the Grumblings Media platforms, Facebook, Rumble, YouTube, X, anywhere podcasts can be heard, Spotify, Apple, Amazon Podcasts, everywhere. Just look for Liberty Lens and Grumblings Media at Grumblings Media. I'm much more sedate today than my usual opening, but that in no way should reflect any less enthusiasm for today's subject matter, or for that fact, my friend and co-host, Mr. Mike Termott. Mike, how are you doing today?
So good to be with you. I will make up for whatever energy you think you have lost, and I think it's coming back. You do not strike me as low energy Jeb at any point, by the way. I think you're doing just fine. I thought your opening was excellent. The basic bottom line is that this podcast is inescapable.
Yes.
It can be found anywhere. It is around the corner. And I, for one, am grateful for so many folks hanging in there with us and inviting us onto their computer and listening to what we have to say. Today's discussion is extremely important. And I want to sort of give a warning to your audience, to our audience. If you don't like ambiguity in your politics, right? If you like things to be easy, this is going to be a tough show.
Right.
As I think all of our episodes are tough on people who can't deal with ambiguity and complexity and two opposing things being simultaneously true.
Right. Yeah, I think Ben Shapiro would like this type of podcast because that's one of his favorite catchphrases, right? Two things can be true simultaneously. All right. So today we're going to talk about...
including the fact that Ben Shapiro is extremely smart and frequently wrong.
There you go. All right. So today's episode is going to involve the federalization of D.C., President Trump's stated purpose to get tough on crime, what it means not just for D.C., but for the rest of the country, Mike, and perhaps tie it into the administration as a whole. So let's start off with this. President Trump decided that there was too much crime for his liking in Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. is one of the highest per capita violent crime cities, if not the highest in the United States, I believe it is. And what's happening there is sort of a he said, she said, Mike. And you being a former cop and a current politician, I think this is right in your wheelhouse. So Washington, D.C., plenty of violent crime. But as most statistical sources have indicated, their crime rate in these key areas has been coming down for three consecutive years. So even though it's still at the top of the list, they have been steadily improving reduce crime.
Yep.
President Trump decided that it was not happening fast enough for his liking, and he, what is known as, federalized Washington, D.C. Now, it is very important to note here, he's got ICE, he's got the National Guard, he's got basically federal law enforcement. Well, there is no law enforcement. I guess the FBI is involved there too, Mike. But anyway, any Fed you could think of is patrolling Washington, D.C. We've all seen the pictures of Humvees in the streets.
Biggest piece is the National Guard. That's right.
The National Guard. And we also had the incident of the assault with a deli weapon, as people say.
Oh, that was bad, John. I hadn't heard it put that way. You can't unhear that.
You can't unhear it. But, of course, I'm talking about the DOJ employee who was so perturbed by seeing all this federal agents in the streets that he hurled a hoagie at a police officer, by which then he was chased down, I believe, to Benny Hill's Yakety Sax music playing in the background.
Yep.
Tackled and arrested by 20 people in his home. It was a tactical assault force that got him out of there. Mike, this, depending on your point of view, is either President Trump cracking down on crime like he promised, or it's a way, way over egregious example of executive power and executive overreach. Talk to me about it. Tell me what you think.
Well, as promised, it's both. Let's start out talking about the crime itself. The District of Columbia, it has a very high crime rate.
Yes.
There are areas in Washington that are quite unsafe. I know where by which I speak. I visit Washington a lot. I live about 2.5 hours from Washington. But I have family that lives in Washington today. Let me put it, I don't think I'm disclosing too much private information. It's my daughter that lives in Washington. And as every father knows, that piques a certain level of interest in the safety of a community.
Right.
So it is true that there are parts of Washington, not downtown so much, but there are plenty of parts in Washington. I lived in Washington for something like a dozen years in the Shaw neighborhood, but spent a lot of time in the Northeast as well as the Northwest. And I can tell you that it is true that there are dangerous places in Washington. And if the federal government has an interest in helping out the local authorities to fight crime, I've got no problem with that whatsoever. And Washington is a good place to do it. You were saying that Washington is toward the top of the list of high crime areas. That list would have to be pretty far down, because Washington's not really at the tippy top, but Washington is at the tippy top of cities over which the president has control, because right. The District of Columbia is treated differently by the Constitution, by federal statute, and the president has the right to call in the National Guard, and he has done so. The National Guard has been brought in from other states, not coincidentally with Republican governors who are predisposed to politically help the president. And so there are many thousands of troops in Washington to help suppress crime. On some level, I want to say all of that is good. There are things that are simultaneously true.
Right.
One of which, and let me speak as both a cop and an economist. This is the dopey way to do it.
Okay. I love how your professionalism shown on that opinion, Mike. It's a dopey way of doing it.
Well, not only is it a dopey way to do it, but the White House has explicitly passed up better ways to do it. Mm. And that bothers me a lot. In the last budget cycle, a lot of money was cut. Federal funds, block grants, incentive funds, programmatic funds earmarked for cities with high crime rates in order to help them fight crime. One could easily argue that a lot of those programs didn't work very well.
Right.
I get that. A lot of them don't work very well. A lot of them probably don't work at all. And right. Some of them work pretty well. What determines those program's level of success is typically who it is on the ground who is gaining access to those funds right. And doing something productive with them, right? But you cannot argue that as strong or as weak as those programs may be, that they are a worse approach to federal interventionism in fighting crime than deploying the National Guard. The National Guard is an extraordinarily expensive way to do it because these guys and gals are neither equipped nor trained nor empowered to do the types of things that you would want them to do. Right. In many of these cases, these police departments that we're going to be talking about, including Washington, including the Metropolitan PD, MPD is what it's called in Washington, MPD and others are down in terms of personnel. Very difficult time to recruit the past decade. Some of these cities are strapped financially.
Right.
And so they haven't done everything they could to beef up their recruitment. And as you might imagine, there's resistance to the idea of lowering the threshold standard required for someone to qualify to be a police officer. In some cases, some of those standards have been adjusted to throw the net a bit more broadly, but I think that most Americans would have a problem and should have a problem with the idea of, well, it's been hard to recruit, let's lower the bar so that we can recruit enough know, that's probably not an optimal solution either, right?
Right, right.
So bringing in troops does fit with that, but it's enormously expensive compared to injecting funds that a police department could use to hire more people.
Right. And Mike, let me jump in real quick, because I mean, when we opened the show, we kind of half joke, but it's true. You are a former cop, so you have a unique perspective when you talk about these things. And one of the things to emphasize here is that it's not necessarily a matter of putting people out with guns and a badge, right? That's not necessarily the solution. And if you think what the armed services are trained for, they're trained for armed conflict. They're trained to go up against other armed services. It's the same kind of problem you have, like when say the Army or the Marines have to go into urban areas overseas and they have to clear out, say, apartment buildings, and they're going from apartment to apartment. That's not what they were trained for. They were trained to obliterate that building, right? They're not trained to arrest people. They're not trained to determine what is an actual crime, what's a true suspicion of crime, what's going to stand up in court, right? So while I appreciate what you're saying, like in some of these high crime areas, if you're not getting enough cops, there's no funding, it's hard recruiting, I can understand, having grown up in the Bronx in the 70s, and when anybody who knows that reference, go watch Fort Apache, the Bronx. That was two right. blocks from my house, okay?
Right.
So I know what I'm talking about in terms of living through it. It seems like in those cases, you just want something, anything to be done. So while I agree with you, perhaps sending in some federal help may seem like a good idea. It's not a catch-all solution, right? Because again, that's like calling an electrician to help you with your plumbing. Yeah, maybe he can help, but he wasn't trained to help you with your plumbing, right? So I think it's the same thing when it comes to the National Guard. And to your point, the expense, especially when it's from, you know, like, say, a Republican governor in Ohio sending National Guard to Washington, D.C. for an extended period of time, that runs into even more costs for, you know.
Yeah.
So I just want to throw that in there.
No, you're exactly right. And what really makes the whole thing smack of too much politics is and a politics of power as opposed to just a politics of crime fighting,
mm-hmm.
each of which could be a populist challenge.
Right.
Is that the recent budget did cut billions and billions from federal block grants that, you know, we as libertarians were complaining about the federal government shouldn't be injecting
right.
these resources. It really should be up to the local municipalities. I still feel that way 100%. But if you've got a choice between injecting federal resources in terms of a block grant or in terms of we're going to send the National Guard, there's no question that a block grant is more efficient. It's better able to be coordinated. It's better able to be deployed in an efficient fashion rather than trying to take a
right.
round National Guardsman and fit it into a square hole, right?
Right, right.
There's a mismatch there. The other thing, the other characteristic of this program that I find so problematic is the absence of these agencies working together.
Mm.
If this was a long-term goal of yours to reduce crime, first of all, you would have announced during the budget debates, you know, we're going to be reducing federal funding, but we're going to be sending in the National Guard at least to those places where they want us, because we think that that's a more efficient way to do it. We'll have better control. It sends the right signal. Whatever your argument is, right? You would have made that argument when you were cutting federal spending.
Right.
But you didn't make that argument when you were cutting federal spending. And one has to wonder why, because that would have addressed some of the pushback the White House was getting at the time. There were people who were upset about cutting the federal spending
right.
on helping communities, right? Some of these were very popular programs. You know, interventions in high-density drug trafficking areas and supporting local law enforcement. Some of these were very popular programs. And when you were cutting them, you were getting pushback. Why didn't you say at that time, we care a lot about crime in these areas. We are going to address them. We have some plans for how to do that. That includes the National Guard and some federal agencies working together and some federal officers being deployed to some of these communities. That would have been a smart time to have said it, and it wasn't said. That's a problem. The other problem is that at no point do you see coordination in advance of the announcement with the local authorities.
Right.
Okay. Why? Anyone who has spent an hour in law enforcement, never mind the 11 and a half years I spent, anyone who spent an hour knows it's a team sport. It's all about coordination.
You mean those Clint Eastwood movies, those Dirty Harry movies, are not accurate there, Mike?
No, they're not.
Okay.
No, they're not. Dirty Harry really should have been fired in the first scene of the first movie. The fact that he hung on until the last scene of the last movie says more about entertainment than law enforcement. And, and I say that as a big Clint Eastwood fan. But good example. It is a team sport, both at the most granular level, you know, cops backing each other up, as well as the most macro level. How do agencies work together? How are chains of command coordinated?
Mm-hmm.
And how are our funds used? How are politicians involved? None of which works perfectly in this country, right? All of which needs improvement. That's a whole nother podcast. I've spent years talking about those subjects. If you are serious about law enforcement, what you would do is you would contact the local authorities and say, here, you know, here's our attitude. We hate the crime in your community. We know that you do too. We've got some resources we want to send you.
Right.
What we want is this to be a coordinated rollout so that the community's happy about it, because that matters. We know that that matters. So we want you, Mr. Mayor, Madam Mayor, Mr. Governor, Madam Governor, we want you to say nice things about this program as we roll it out. And we know that the best way to get you to say nice things about it is if you really mean that, you know, if you really believe in this. We want to work together with you, and we can send you the types of resources and work out chains of command in advance. Nobody thought it looked anything but stupid that the chain of command was unclear, even to the chief of police in Washington. That was an embarrassment.
Right, and that can't be emphasized enough, in my opinion, because, like, think about things that don't rise to the level of federalization or troops rolling in, you know, like the National Guard. Think about just, like, say, kidnapping cases where the FBI might be called in, right? The FBI comes in. They don't immediately come in like in the movies and like, everybody out, we're taking over. Nobody talk to anybody but me. You know, it doesn't work like that, right? It's always like, hey, we got to coordinate with whoever, the chief of detectives, or we have to coordinate with the chief of police or the lead sheriff or whatever. Whoever's in charge locally, they always pay the courtesy of, how are we going to work together? The ultimate goal is finding the kidnapped victim, et cetera, et cetera. And in this case, when you have the chief of police going like, well, I don't know what's going on. You know, just giving you one of these.
Really embarrassing.
It's an embarrassing look. And, Mike, I know we want to...
Inefficient.
Well, that's the other thing, right?
Politically embarrassing. And as a practical, pragmatic matter, you're just not getting the job done.
Yeah.
Which brings me to one more point in this category, right? Okay. If you wanted to fight... If all you cared about was to fight crime... By the way, I'm not suggesting that politicians shouldn't care about politics.
Right.
I don't mean to come off as quite that sophomoric, right?
Right, right.
I wasn't born last night, as they say. Okay. It's okay to care about politics. It's okay to make a political point. I understand all that. Okay. But if you wanted to position yourself as Mr. Crime Fighter.
Right.
And you're in, let's pick one, the Republican Party. Okay, you're a Republican crime fighter. And let's say you're president of the United States. Okay, so you're a Republican president of the United States. Where would you start? Would you start by pissing off all of the Democrats? Or would you actually want to work with the local authorities? Because if it were me, having been a cop, never mind having been a professional economist for 3 decades, let's flush right. that down the toilet.
Right.
Having been a cop for a decade, what I would do is I would call up the governor in my party, let's say Tennessee.
Right.
And I would say, you've got a crime problem in Memphis. And that governor is going to be really nice to me because we're in the same party and I'm the president. He's going to say, damn right we do. And I'm going to say, okay, I want to look really good. I want you to look really good. I want our party to look really good. And also, just parenthetically, let's fight crime as right. long as we're at it. As long as we're trying to look good, let's fight crime too. Because, right. you know, maybe in the long run, people will be happy that we fight crime. Let's work out a plan where I send in the National Guard. Maybe you even want to request the National Guard, right? That way we don't look like we're undermining federalism. And, oh, that's right. Federalism is one of those things that our party stands for. I almost forgot. Okay. So why don't you say you want the National Guard? I'll say, good idea. And we send the National Guard in. We coordinate with the Memphis police. By the way, to make you look really good, Mr. Governor, why don't you send in some state state police too, right?
Right.
Oh,
right.
Yeah, good idea, Mr. President. We're all going to look good. We're all going to look good. And we're going to coordinate. Well, okay, what are we going to do about the mayor? The mayor's going to be mad. The mayor is a Democrat. Oh. All right, someone's got to call and make nice with the mayor and make him understand that,
right.
that the cavalry's coming whether you want it to or not. But why would you pick the most resistant place, like Chicago, as your next target?
Well, you're absolutely right, by the way. And I think I have an answer for that. But before we kind of jump that, I want to just throw some numbers out there. So just to wrap up Washington, D.C. Now, as we said earlier, Washington, D.C. is a very special case. I'm using air quotes, owned by the federal government. It is the president's responsibility. It's yep. Congress's responsibility to run Washington, D.C. It
right.
is the only part of this country that has that designation. So that's different. So to the extent of why Washington, D.C., fewer legal hurdles to
Oh, absolutely. To it's clear. The only place where he has the authority.
Right. And finally, I wouldn't do this normally as a data scientist. You wouldn't do it as an economist. But let's compare year-over-year statistics for the short amount of time that this has been going on. And again, I don't choose to do this because I know it's bad data practice, but the administration is choosing to do this, so I will jump on that. According to the White House, this is the White House's own numbers, from August 7th to yesterday, there have been slightly over 1,000 individuals arrested under the federalization of Washington, D.C., meaning the federal ICE, National Guard, everybody combined.
The police department, right?
Right. In the same period in 2024, MPD, the local police force, arrested 1,071 individuals.
About the
now,
same.
Almost exactly the same. The major difference being that MPD doesn't have a full-fledged social media crew following them around for every literal arrest like the president has, and suiting up and going out with the troops and all that, right? So to your point, not only is it questionable in terms of efficiency, it's questionable in terms of politics, but the results are exactly the same. In the one-week period that, by the way, it's not Big John, it's not Mike Dermott, it is President Trump and the White House who are extolling these numbers. They are almost identical to what MPD was able
yeah.
to produce year over year. So just
yeah.
just to set that, Mike.
No, that is an interesting observation. It was recently observed that we went something like, 7 or 8 days or something without a homicide in Washington, which is not unheard of, but
right.
which is unusual. And a lot of folks took that as a good sign. let's jump in here and say, let's hope, notwithstanding that initial data point
right.
of arrests being about the same, let's hope that the momentary 1 week is not enough data to suggest what's yeah. going on, right? But let's hope that that momentary decline in homicides does take hold. Let's hope this works. Right. As inefficient as it may be, as expensive as it may be, as politicized as it may be, as counter as it may be to the apparent long-term articulation by the White House of their interest in injecting federal resources into fighting local crime. Never mind all that. Let's hope it works.
Right.
Even if it doesn't work very well, let's hope it works a little bit, right?
Yeah.
If you're gonna violate home rule, let's hope that at least we get a little bit of diminished crime for the pain.
Right. And again, no mention of what their goals are for success when they can then return home rule, right? It's this, which is also troubling. It's this open-ended yep. thing, right? So
right.
that's another troubling. But
they have to go to the White House has to go to Congress after 30 right. days to get approval. I don't think that that's going to be terribly difficult to achieve.
Right.
By the way, it.
Yeah.
The Senate won't. May be a problem, so we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. Okay. Now, it's just sort of to transition this, there have been rumblings of Chicago being next, New York being next.
Yeah, I don't know. The president said we're going to go to Chicago. I don't know if that's a mere rumbling. This is not just
yeah.
a rumor. This is the president of the United States saying
right.
he wants to go to Chicago next.
Right, exactly. So, you know, being, again, good data guys, we both took a look of the top violent crime cities in the U.S. Depending on which data you use, you might get one or two swap outs. But here's let's use the FBI one just for the sake of simplicity, right? According to the FBI data, the most recent FBI data, the top 10 cities for violent per capita crime rates are St. Louis, Baltimore, Oakland, Detroit, Little Rock, Cleveland, Kansas City, Albuquerque, Dayton, and San Bernardino. Now, if you've noticed, Chicago, New York, and Los Angeles don't come up in that top 10.
No, they didn't make the list. They've got neighborhoods that are pretty bad, but as the city goes overall,
right.
don't make the cut.
And in terms of politically, going by the governor of the state, there are five that are Democratic states, their governor's Democrats, and five that are Republican-run, red states.
Yep.
St. Louis, Little Rock, Cleveland, Kansas City, and Dayton are the Republican states. Baltimore, Oakland, Detroit, Albuquerque, San Bernardino are the blue states.
Yep.
So it's a 50-50 split. It's not, as the administration paints, a case of like every horrible crime-ridden city happens to be run by Democrats. That's not the case. Now, we're not talking about mayors, municipalities. I get that.
Right. Most of the mayors are Democrats, right?
Probably are Democrats, right.
Yep.
But it does set up this thing, Mike, to your point, why not start out, say, St. Louis to me would be a perfect before we get
well,
there.
Let me jump in to yes. support that. Missouri's got Kansas City and St. Louis.
Right. Kansas City
didn't make the top 10, but
no, it did actually. And,
oh, okay.
But Kansas City always slips my mind because of the river splitting it on both sides.
No,
of Kansas,
I get
Kansas
that.
And Missouri.
And
yeah,
Ohio
right.
has both Dayton and Cleveland.
Yes. So by hitting up two Republican governors, you get rid of the 40%. Now, but Mike, here's the thing. We said that D.C. was a special case because the Constitution gives running it to Congress. However, it would seem to me that the state sovereignty, the 10th Amendment, would say these governors get to run their own states. How is it that President Trump can even think of sending federalizing the policing of those cities, say like Chicago and New York, even if he had a reason to send really was a crime rate.
Right. And I think that the thinking goes in the opposite direction of what it would for most administrations. The thinking goes, this is what we want to do. How do we find a law that will allow us to do so? As opposed to what does the Constitution say our powers and our jobs are?
Right.
and how do we go about doing as good a job as we can within those confines? So the administration has found, as has been demonstrated in the past few months, opportunities to declare emergencies, right? You declare an emergency and that opens up a whole bunch of powers. And the court says, well, you know, Congress didn't do a very good job of defining what an emergency is. So as a court, our hands are kind of tied because that's not our job to define what an emergency is. So if Congress wants to reel in the power of the president, it's going to have to do it itself. We're out.
Right.
And this is probably, if I had to guess, going to fall into that category. Not 100%, but I think it's probably going to fall into that category. In order for the National Guard to be used for purposes of local law enforcement, one of two, either of two things has to happen. One is the governor has to call in the National Guard.
Right.
Again, if it were me, I'd be reaching out to Tennessee and Ohio, right? And working hand in glove where it's a relatively supportive environment. The mayors might be pissy, but a relatively supportive environment where we could test how well this works, demonstrate how well this works. We all look like stars. We fight crime. And, oh, yes, by the way, fewer people are killed. That's how I would handle this. Okay, but in the case that he has picked of Chicago, Governor Pritzker, long-term hardcore Democrat, and not one who is predisposed to cutting the Trump administration a lot of slack,
right,
has said he doesn't want the National Guard, doesn't need the National Guard, and is downright offended at the idea of sending in the National Guard. Okay, we get all that. By the way, we do need to talk about the dopiness of the response from the Democratic Party as well. I personally think that they have, pardon me, I personally think that they have match the dopiness of the White House in terms of their reaction to all of this. But we'll get to that in a moment. Yeah. So Pritzker says he doesn't want him in. Okay, that leaves Plan B, which is the president can federalize the National Guard, send them in. That still does not allow them to be used for local law enforcement. In order for them to be used for local law enforcement, you've got to get through or around what we call posse comitatus,
right,
which is the federal ban, federal legislated ban against the National Guard being used for local law enforcement. And the way you get around that is to cite, to invoke the Insurrection Act,
right,
which means you need to claim one of a few different things, none of which applies to these cases, except if you read really closely and you get a judge who's not mad at you, you could probably say local resources are not up to the task of protecting Americans from violence. That is what you're going to have to claim. That's a layered claim. You've got to claim bad stuff is happening. You've got to claim that local resources are not up to the task, that it's failed, that people are suffering, and we need to do something about it, and that makes it, in effect, an emergency under the Insurrection Act.
Right.
It's a bit of a stretch. Will the courts block the administration from invoking this? I'm going to guess that the courts are going to say Congress did not sufficiently articulate the limitations. Right. I think that as a practical matter, anyone who reads these statutes knows damned well that Congress had no intention of allowing an administration to send in the National Guard for purposes of local law enforcement unless it was either an open rebellion or at the very least, rioting that risked meltdown.
And in those cases, more than likely, the governor would ask for help anyway.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, the last, you know, in 1992, George Herbert Walker Bush, who was my boss's 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 boss, sent in the National Guard and invoked the Insurrection Act, even though the governor of California requested the National Guard. And here's why. It made it easier for federalized resources to be coordinated with local resources by just federalizing the whole thing. When the president decided to send in active military troops as well. So right. For all of those to be coordinated, he had to federalize the whole enchilada instead of just, right. The governor calling for some and him sending in. All of that was coordinated with the governor.
But I was going to say that was still aligned with the spirit of what Congress intended, which was
yes.
You had the governor requesting the help, calling out the National Guard.
And there was rioting.
And there was rioting in the streets.
Let's not – oh, yeah, there was rioting.
We're talking about the Rodney King riots, right?
Exactly.
So, you know, but to your point, I think this administration and President Trump and whoever his handlers are have decided that there is room for interpretation on anything. And there is room for aggressive, like, better task for forgiveness than permission
yep.
mentality, right? Now, and to me, Mike, this is, of course, the danger, right? That, as we said, statistics don't back up the need or any logical conclusion that Chicago or New York should in any way, shape, or form be federalized or have troops sent in or any of that. Both. They're not among the worst for violent crime rates. They have been steadily improving their crime stats, believe it or not. They've been dropping over the last couple of years. So to the extent that you're trying to score political points by trying to show up blue state governors, this is a very dangerous path, I would think you would agree, that the president is trying to go down in the sense that does every problem now get solved from Washington when it comes to policing and law enforcement? Does every problem come down to Trump will ride in at the head of the cavalry and take care of the problem for you? That to me is the danger.
Yeah, it certainly appears that that's the attitude. Because if it were not the attitude, you'd be pursuing some strategy that's more akin to what I had suggested earlier, working with Republican governors to demonstrate right. that it could work and allowing those Republican governors to take at least some, if not the lion's share of the credit for the success. So it absolutely suggests that the White House is looking for the political advantage over Democratic governors. It absolutely looks like that. And we understand that on some level, a piece of that is acceptable in the right. sense that politicians do this to each other all the time, right? No, I don't like your solution. I like my solution. How come? Because it's my solution. Right. You know, that is not uncommon in American politics or any place. Any other place on planet Earth. So yeah. You're naturally going to get that. What I worry about is the White House federalizing so much, as you point out. You know, silly examples like the Kennedy Center and the Cracker Barrel logo. You know, these are absolutely silly, dopey examples,
right?
Which almost should make us feel dopey for bringing them up. The reason right. I do is because it's dopey that the administration would weigh in on these things.
Right.
I worry about an administration that doesn't trust the rest of either the party, the rest of local officials inside or outside the Republican Party elsewhere throughout America, and does not sufficiently trust the American people to figure out some of these things on their own. Just, you know, looking for places to inject federal control is not the most efficient way to go at this. There is an old saying, of course, when all you've got is a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
Like a nail, yeah.
Well, the problem as I see it is that it's slightly different in this particular case. The administration has a hammer and therefore wants to swing it, whether there's a nail there or not. To your point, the crime stats have been coming down. Okay, so why didn't we do this 8 years ago? Why didn't we do this 4 years ago? Why didn't we do this under other administrations? Why is it that other Republican governors or Democratic governors haven't brought up this site? Why is it that Democratic governors didn't bring this up with Joe Biden? Why is it Republican governors never brought this up with Donald Trump? Why is it that this is the first time anyone has come up with the idea that the National Guard should be sent in immediately after cutting federal funding to crime prevention programs in local police departments? It just looks like we're trying to swing the hammer, whether there's a problem there or not. And that, I think, is the problem with the administration saying things about the crime data that are not true, right? When the administration says that the crime data are wrong, they're not telling you the truth. There is absolutely no evidence to suggest that the crime data are wrong, and, which, by the way, dovetails with the idea that you know, we should fire the head of the Bureau of Labor Statistics.
Well, that's
because there was no evidence there that the statistics were wrong either. They were just statistics that undermined our narrative. And so the head of the Statistical Bureau had to go in order to assist the narrative that the data were wrong.
Right. And that actually is a running theme of any Trump, of both Trump administrations, is that Trump himself is not good with numbers. So when he says stuff, someone has to cover for him. So to your deviating slightly, to your economic thing, today he said, food prices are down. Eggs are so much cheaper, you know, but the statistics are food prices have gone up 5% year over year. No amount of anything is going to change that, no matter what he says, but he'll just say it. And now you have people scrambling. You and I both work with data enough. What was that? There's lies, damn lies, and statistics, right? The old.
That's right.
Was it Will? Oh, now I can't remember. The satirist. Will, who said it?
Sapphire.
No, not Will Sapphire. The old cowboy looking guy. I can't remember his name.
Oh, and Will not something. George Will.
No, not George Will. But anyway.
Will Rogers.
Will Rogers. There you go. Will Rogers, I think, came up with it. There's lies, damn lies, and statistics. But anyway.
When I worked in Washington as an advocate, which was a dirty decade.
Right.
Well, the good news is it was for conservative principles. It was pushing free markets and greater competition. When I worked in Washington as an advocate, we used to say, first number wins. Because once a number got out there, it was very difficult to overturn it in the minds of
the public,
either the public or the media or the legislators. So it was very important to get a number out there in a hurry. Much more important was speed than accuracy.
I can understand that. And one of the things I want to just wrap this up on, Mike, is, you know, as libertarians, we typically will find ourselves supporting defend the guard bills. So wherever you see a defend the guard bill, libertarians are usually behind it. Most, I think, liberty advocates are behind something like that. Right now, the federal government, with its, you know, the administration's push to federalize everything and send the ICE everywhere and everything like that and mobilize the National Guards everywhere, this is actually running counter to state trends. And just for example, defend the guard bills that are pending right now in Missouri, South Carolina, Texas, Kansas, Wyoming, Idaho, Arizona, Illinois. Again, a mix of red and blue states. This seems to rise above the partisanship, Mike. So is the president, do you think, misreading this? Or is it really that the people have sort of like, send it in for the crime, but not to send my kid to Afghanistan or Iran? I mean, is it that type of dichotomy, you think?
I do think it's that type of dichotomy. I think the White House is taking advantage of the fact that most Americans don't connect the dots from federalization of the National Guard to federalism or local control. I think that most folks support National Guard legislation because of resistance to the idea of deploying the National Guard to dopey military interventions abroad. I think that that's what all of that is is about. And I don't think that people worry so much on behalf of the National Guard or federalism, for that matter, when it's used to fight crime. Fighting crime is an extraordinarily popular political issue,
right,
that has lasted quite literally for hundreds of years. I suspect it'll last for hundreds of years into the future, right, and for good reason. You know, even as libertarians, it's one of the few things that we believe that the government should be doing and, yes, and getting right. We ask so little of our government. All we really ask is to be left alone and to help, you know, keep my daughter safe. If right, you do that, we love our politicians. And that's what the president is banking on, that Americans are just going to say, is this guy trying to fight crime or isn't he? Check that box. Yes, it looks good. And I believe that Democrats are shooting themselves in the foot by not addressing the popular issue here,
right,
which is to lean into the idea of fighting crime. It, you know, just like I said earlier, if I were the president, I'd be reaching out to Republican governors. Okay. If I were a Democratic governor, and I'm not, but if I were a Democratic governor, I would be tempted to go the other direction on this. Not Pritzker. It's too late for Pritzker, right? Too damned late for Pritzker. But if I were a Democratic governor, and I had an urban area that had some crime, almost doesn't matter. You know, you don't have to be in the top five, but, you know, if I had a pocket of crime in my state, I think I would be tempted to call the White House and say, let's work together. Now, the White House would jump all over. It'd be a huge victory for them, right? But I also think it'd be a huge victory for the Democratic Party, because you'd be able to position yourself as fighting crime,
right,
without compromising in terms of allowing the president to do something dopey, because the president wouldn't be doing something dopey. The president would be reacting to your proactive crime fighting nature.
Right.
And in that sense, you know, we always talk about the Republican part, well, President Trump in particular, baiting the Democrats, right?
Yeah.
He will find a popular issue, push until he pushes too far. The Democrats, right, you know, their heads explode, they complain, and they wind up on the wrong side of the issue.
Right.
This is, you know, this is what happened with immigration. We understand that. Okay. I would see if I could turn the tables. If I were a Democratic governor, I would bait the White House. I would say, if you guys are really into fighting crime, as I hope you are, come to my state, help me out. I got a program ready for you guys. I want to work together hand in glove. I think no self-respecting Republican could resist that. I would not advise our party to resist that. I would advise to lean into that and to work together. And, you know, for a libertarian, it's a twofer. Not only do you have governments not trying to kill each other over politics and actually trying to do the one thing we want the government to do well, but at the same time, it would send the subtle signal that all of this shoving things down the throat of a governor is not the way to go.
You're right. And if both sides play ball on that, I think that is a good strategy to pursue, and one that would yield better, more efficient results. It would also allow for the management, like, hey, come in for a year, come in for 6 months. Once we hit these targets, then you're gone. We continue the program. We discuss funding down the road. You're absolutely right. But in those cases, both sides have to take their victories as they are, not try to obliterate the other. But and who knows?
Well, you're absolutely right. And it is tricky. And I am reminded of the fact that Governor Christie did pay a price when he hugged President Obama on the tarmac of the airport when
for the hurricane relief.
The hurricane relief package, right? There is a price to pay for coordinating with someone in the other party.
Yes.
But as you and I will discuss in future podcasts, I believe this will be one of the hottest topics in 2028, is who, as a politician, can rise above the bifurcated nature of our culture as the result of polarized politics. Who can help us out? Because our culture is going in a bad direction. And it's true that a whole lot of people jumped all over Christie for looking like he wanted to work with President Obama, gave him a hug, blah, blah, blah. I understand that. That was some years ago. And it makes me wonder whether, you know, a Republican governor today who hugs a Democratic governor or a Democratic mayor, right? If you were a Republican governor of Tennessee and you hugged the Democratic mayor of Memphis and you were bringing in federal resources, it makes me wonder whether that goes much better today than it did a number of years ago.
Probably
not because I don't see the acrimony, but because of it. Mm-hmm. I think Americans are sick of it.
I hope you're right, Mike. I hope you're right. Okay. On that note, I hope you've enjoyed this episode of Liberty Lens. It was an interesting one. Flew right by, Mike, in terms of just the ideas going back and forth. For everyone out there, you've been watching Liberty Lens right here, presented by Grumblings Media, grumblingsmedia.com. Also check us out on Rumble, YouTube, Facebook, and X. Also on your favorite podcast platforms like Apple, Spotify, and Amazon. And don't forget, go to our website, shop our swag, help the boys out, buy some t-shirts or hats and mugs. I feel obligated to say that, Mike, because after all, we do live in a capitalist society. Until next week, for my friend Mike Termott, this has been Big John. Peace, everyone.